The Zanky Wank and the Blather Witch, an original Fantastic Fairy Extravaganza. Part 1. A Trip to Fable Land. By the Queen Moon's Mystic Light, by the Hush of Holy Night, by the Woodland Deep and Green, by the Starlight's Silver Sheen, by the Zephyr's Whispered Spell, Brooding Powers Invisible, Fairy Court, and Elfin Throng, unto whom the Groves belong, and by laws of ancient date, found in scrolls of fairy fate, stream and fount are dedicate. Wheresoe'er your feet today far from haunts of men may stray, we adjure you stay no more exiles on an alien shore, but with spells of magic birth once again make glad the earth. Philip Dare. A Trip to Fable Land. Well, said the Zanky Wank as he swallowed another jam tart, I think we had better start on our travels at once. They were all standing under the clock at Charing Cross Station when the station was closed and everybody else had departed, except the train which the Zanky Wank had himself chartered. It was all so odd and strange, and the gathering was so very motley, that if it had been tomorrow morning instead of last night, Willie and Maud would certainly have said they had both been dreaming. But, of course, they were not dreaming because they were wide awake and dressed. Besides, they remembered Charing Cross Station quite well, having started therefrom with their father and mother only last summer when they went to the seaside for their holidays, and what jolly times they had on the sands. So Maud said promptly, "It is not nightmare or dreams or anything. We don't know what it is, but we must not go to sleep, Willie, in case anything should happen." Willie replied that he did not want to go to sleep anymore. "I believe it's a show," he added, "and somebody's run away with us. How lovely. I'm glad we are lost. Let us go and ask that tall gentleman, who looks like the parlor tongs in a bathing suit, to give us some more buns." For, being a boy, he could always eat buns, or an abundance of them, only I hope you won't tell the nursery governess I told you. It was the Zanky Wank, who was doing some conjuring tricks for the benefit of the Jack Haranday Jam and Mr. Swinglebinks, to whom Willie referred. The Zanky Wank was certainly a very curious person to look at. He had very long legs, very long arms, and a very small body, a long neck and a head like a peacock. He was not wearing a bathing suit as Willie imagined, because there were tails to his jacket, hanging down almost to his heels. He wore a sash round his waist, and his clothes were all speckled as though he had been peppered with the colors out of a very large kaleidoscope. The Jack Haranday Jam was also rather tall and thin, but dressed in the very height of fashion, with a flower in his coat and a cigarette in his mouth, which he never smoked because he never lit it. He was believed by all the others, you shall know who all the others were presently, to know more things than the man in the moon, because he nearly always said something that nobody else ever thought of. And the man in the moon knows more things than the old woman of Mars. You have naturally heard all about Mars, at least, if you have not heard all about her, you all have heard about her, which is just the same thing, only reversed. There was an old woman of Mars who'd constantly say, "Bless my stars, there's the sun and the moon and the earth and a swoon, all dying for particulars you Lars. Of this planet of mine called Mars." Mr. Swinglebinks, unlike his two companions, was short, stout, and dreadfully important. In Fable Land, where we are going as soon as we start for that happy place, he kept a grocer's shop once upon a time. As nobody cared a fig for his sugar and currants, however, he retired from business and took to dates and the making of new almanacs, and was now traveling about for the benefit of his figures. He was very strong on arithmetic, and could read, write, and arithmetize before he went to school, so he never went at all. While the Zanky Wank was talking to his friends, an unseen porter rang an unseen bell, and called out in an unknown tongue, "Take your seats for Fable Land, which stands upon a tableland, and don't distress the guard. And when you pass the cableland, say nothing to the gableland because it hurts the guard." "We must put that porter back in the bottle," said the Jack Haranday Jam. "We shall want some bottled porter to drink on the road." "Well," said Maud, "what a ridiculous thing to say. We don't bottle railway porters, I am sure." "I wish the Blather Witch would come," exclaimed the Zanky Wank. "We shall miss the next train. She is most provoking. She promised to be here 3 weeks ago, and we have been waiting ever since." This astounding statement quite disturbed Willie, who almost swallowed a bun in his excitement. Had he and Maud been waiting there 3 weeks as well? What would they think at home? You see, Maud and Willie, who were brother and sister, had been on a visit to their grandmama, and on their way home they had fallen asleep in the carriage, after having repeated to each other all the wonderful fairy tales their grandmama had related to them. How long they had slept they could not guess, but when they woke up, instead of finding themselves at home in St. George's Square, they discovered that they were at Charing Cross Station. Mary, their nurse, had disappeared, so had John the coachman, and it was the Zanky Wank who had opened the door and assisted them to alight, saying at the same time most politely, "I assist you to alight, because it is so dark." Then he gave them buns and chocolates, ice creams, apples, pears, shrimps and cranberry tarts. So it stands to reason that after such a mixture they were rather perplexed. However, they did not seem very much distressed, and as they were both fond of adventures, especially in books, they were quite content to accept the Zanky Wank's offer to take them for a ride in the Midnight Express to Fableland, over which, as everybody knows, King Aesop reigns. Maudie was 9 1/2 and Willie was 8 1/4. Very nice ages indeed, unless you happen to be younger or older, and then your own age is nicer still. "I think," said the Zanky Wank, "that we will start without the Blether Witch. She knows the way and can take a balloon. If she takes a balloon she will lose it. You had better let the balloon take her," exclaimed the Jacarandajam severely. "Take your places. Take your places," cried the unseen porter. So everybody made a rush for the train, and they all entered a Pullman car and sat down on the seats. Dear me. How very incorrectly that porter speaks. He means, of course, that the seats should take or receive us. The Zanky Wank only smiled, while Mr. Swinglebinks commenced counting up to 100, but as he lost one, he could only count up to 99. So, to keep his arithmetic going, he subtracted a timepiece from his neighbor's pocket, multiplied his foot warmers, and divided his attention between the Wimble and the Womble, who were both of the party, being left-handed and deaf. Maudie and Willie took their places in the car with all the other passengers amid a perfect babel of chattering and laughing and crying, and then, as the train began to slowly move out of the station, the Zanky Wank solemnly sang the following serious song. Off to Fableland. The midnight train departs at 3, to Fableland we go, for this express is nothing less than a steamer, don't you know? We're sailing now upon the Thames, all in a penny boat, and we soon shall change for a mountain range, in the atmosphere to float. So off we go to Fableland, speak kindly to the guard, which many think a Babelland, but this you disregard. You'll find it is a stable land, with stables in the yard, a possible, probable, able land, so do not vex the guard. We've left behind us Charing Cross, and all the town in bed, for it is plain, though in this train, we're standing on our head. We're riding now in Bedfordshire, which is the land of Nod, and yet in the sky we are flying high, which seems extremely odd. So off we go to Fableland, speak kindly to the guard, which many think a Babelland, but this you disregard. You'll find it is a stable land, with stables in the yard, a possible, probable, able land, so do not vex the guard. Maudie and Willie found themselves joining lustily in the chorus when the Zanky Wank pulled the cord communicating with the guard, and, opening the window, climbed out onto the top of the carriage calling all the time. Guard. 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 Don't go so hard. Just give the brake a hitch. To Charing Cross return, nay, do not look so stern, for I would not telegram, I must send a telegram, to my darling little Blether Witch. So the guard turned the train round, and they went back to Charing Cross as quick as lightning. It's my fault, moaned the Jacarandajam, I ought to have reminded you. Never mind, we will put on another engine. So the Zanky Wank got out and sent a telegram to the Blether Witch, and desired her to follow on in a balloon. Again they started, and everybody settled down until the train reached the British Channel, when it dived through a tunnel into an uninhabited country, where the post office clerk popped his head into the carriage window and handed in a telegram. From the Blether Witch, to the Zanky Wank. Don't wait tea. Gone to the dentist's. Extremely thoughtful, exclaimed everybody. But the Zanky Wank wept, and explained to the sympathetic Ma that he was engaged to be married to the Blether Witch, and he had been waiting for her for 14 years. Such a charming creature. I will introduce you when she comes. Fancy, she is only 2 feet 1 inch and 1/3 high. Such a suitable height for a bride. What, expostulated Willie and Maud together, she's no bigger than our baby. And you are quite. 8 feet 1/2 inch. How disproportionate. It seems to me to be a most unequal match, answered Maud. What does her mother say? Oh, she hasn't got any mother, you know. That would not do. She has been asleep for 2,000 years, and has only just woke up to the fact that I am her destiny. She is only joking, declared Maud. 2,000 years. She must be joking. No, replied the Zanky Wank somewhat sadly, she is not joking. She never jokes. She is of Scottish descent, he added reflectively. I hope she will keep her appointment. I am afraid she is rather giddy.
Giddy.
Well, if she has waited 2,000 years before making up her mind to go to the dentist, she must be giddy. I am afraid you are not speaking the truth. Before any reply could be given, the guard came to the window and said they would have to go back to Charing Cross again, as he forgot to pay his rent, and he always paid his rent on Monday. But this is not Monday, said Willie. Yesterday was Monday. Today is tomorrow, you know, therefore it is Tuesday. Pay your landlady double next Monday and that will do just as well. The guard hesitated. Don't vex the guard, they all said in chorus. I am not vexed, said the guard, touching his hat. Do you think it would be right to pay double? You see, my landlady is single. She might not like it.
Right, I.
Oh, you, on a postcard and send it to her. It will do just as well, if not better, suggested Mr. Swinglebinks. So the guard sent the postcard, but in his agitation he told the engineer driver to go straight ahead instead of round the corner. The consequence was that they were run into by a demon on a bicycle, and thrown out of the train down a coal mine. Luckily there were no coals in the mine, so it did not matter, and they went boldly forward, that is to say, Willie and Maud did, and knocked at the front door of a handsome house that suddenly appeared before them. Nobody opened the door, so they walked in. They looked behind them, but could not see the Zanky Wank or any of the passengers in the train, therefore, not knowing what else to do, they went upstairs. They appeared to be walking upstairs for hours without coming to a landing or meeting with anyone, and the interminable steps began to grow monotonous. Presently they heard a scuffling and a stamping and a roaring behind them, and something or somebody began to push them most rudely until at last the wall gave way, the stairs gave way, they gave way, and tumbled right onto the tips of their noses. Out of the way! Out of the way! Screamed a chorus of curious voices, and Maud and Willie found themselves taken by the hand by a weird-looking dwarf with a swivel eye and an elevated proboscis, and led out of danger. The children could not help gazing upon their preserver, who was so grotesquely formed, with a humped back, twisted legs, very long arms, and such a funny little body without any neck. But his eyes atoned for everything, they sparkled and glinted in their sockets like bright brown diamonds, only there are no brown diamonds, you know, only white and pink ones. The dwarf did not appear to mind the wondering looks of the children at all, but patted them on the cheeks and told them not to be frightened. But whether he meant frightened of himself, or of the birds, beasts, and fishes that were hurrying by in such confusing masses, they could not tell. One thing, however, that astonished them very much was the deference with which they greeted their quaint rescuer, as they passed by. For every creature from the lion to the mouse bowed most politely as they approached him, and then went on their way gaily frisking, for this was their weekly half-holiday. How do you like my menagerie? Inquired the dwarf. Rough and ready, perhaps, but as docile as a flat iron if you treat them properly. It is just like the zoo, declared Willie. Or the animals in Aesop's fables, suggested Maud. This delighted the dwarf very much, for though he looked so serious, he was full of good humor and skipped about with much agility.
Good. Good.
He cried. Aesop in the zoo. Ha! Ha! He! He! Anybody can be a zoo, but only one can be Aesop, and I am he. Aesop. Are you really Mr. Aesop, the Phrygian philosopher? Cried Maud. King Aesop, I should say, corrected Willie. I am glad we have met you, because now, perhaps, you will kindly tell us what a fable really is. A fable, said the merry Aesop, with a twinkle in his witty eyes, is a fictitious story about nothing that ever happened, related by nobody that ever lived. And the moral is, that everyone is quite innocent, only they must not do it again.
Ah. That is only your fun, said Willie sagely, because of the moral.
Why do they give you so many morals?
I don't know, answered Aesop gravely. But the commentators and editors do give a lot of applications and morals to the tales of my animals, don't they?
I like a tale with a moral, averred Maud. It finishes everything up so satisfactorily, I think. Now, Mr. Aesop, as you know so much, please tell us what a proverb is?
Ah, replied Mr. Aesop, I don't make proverbs. There are too many already, but a proverb usually seems to me to be something you always theoretically remember to practically forget.
Neither of the children quite understood this, though Maud thought it was what her papa would call satire, and satire was such a strange word that she could never fully comprehend the meaning. Willie was silent too, like his sister, and seeing them deep in thought,
King Aesop waved the little wand he had in his hand, and all the birds and beasts and fishes joined hands and paws, and fins and wings, and danced in a circle singing to the music of a quantity of piping birds in the trees. If you want to be merry and wise, you must all be as bright as you can, you never must quarrel, or spoil a right moral, but live on a regular plan. You must read, write and arithmetize, or you'll never grow up to be good, and you mustn't say won't, or I shan't and I don't, or disturb the indicative mood. So round about the knowledge tree, each boy and girl must go, to learn in school the golden rule, and duties line to toe. If you want to be clever and smart, you must also be ready for play, and don't be too subtle when batting your shuttle, but sport in a frolicsome way. With bat and with ball take your part, or with little doll perched on your knee, you sing all the time, to a nursery rhyme, before you go into your tea. So round about the sunset tree each boy and girl should go to play a game of, what's its name? That is each game, you know. After merrily joining in this very original song, with dancing accompaniment, Maud and Willie thank King Aesop for permitting his animals to entertain them. Always glad to please good little boys and girls, you know, he replied pleasantly, even in their play they furnish us with a new fable and a moral. And that is? All play and no work.